Okay, I sent out
Okay, we're
the
on. We're recording.
recording but just before you begin, just
Okay, now we're recording again. Okay.
the topic for this evening's shiur will relate to Heksher Kalim before Pesach. We'll begin actually with the psukim that I found in front of you on the source sheet that you have, number Aleph. The context, of course, is the Nechama that Klal Yisrael fought against Midian. And in the course of that Nechama, there was booty that was captured that included different types of vessels, kelim, utensils. Of course, these utensils were used by the non-Jews, by the Midianites. As a result, they were treif. And now there was a need to go ahead and engage in Heksher kelim. So the pasuk over there tells us that Vayomer Elazar HaKohen, to those who came, Mitzvah Milchama, Zoschu Kasa Torah, Shetziva Hashem as Moshe. And then we have the Torah mentions a number of different material, Aches Azov, Yes HaKosef, Es HaNechoshes, Es HaBarzel, Es HaBdil, Yes HaOfares. Torah speaks about gold, silver, copper, lead. And then we have the Psukim that I found in front of you in item Aleph. Kol Dovah Asher Yavo Ba'esh, Tavir Ba'esh V'Taher. The Torah says any utensil whose usage is through fire has to be kashered through fire. The basic principle that is being enunciated here, as Rashi on the spot directly below in the second item, the second makar, Rashi comments, Ta'aviru ba'esh, kederech tashmisho hagoloso. The way the item is used, that's the way the item is going to be kashered. And the Torah, in effect, indicated that. The Torah spoke about two different mediums. One, the medium of fire, and the way one kashers such an item is through fire. And the Torah in the second segment indicates, V'chol asher lo yovo ba'esh, tavir ba'mayim. So Rashi here articulates the rule of thumb. Ma she'tashmisho yidei chamin, yagileno b'chamin. That which is used with fire, that has to be kashered through fire. Ma she'tashmisho yidei tzli, the first part of Rashi, Chamin, refers, of course, to hot water, namely the idea of Hagolah. Rashi actually reverses the order of the Pasuk. That which is done through Eish, namely Tzli, namely that which is roasted, these are roasting pans and the like, that requires Eish. And as a tray for a baking pan, a roasting pan, a frying pan, requires kashering through what's known as the process of Libun, Lamed Yud Beis Vav Nun, which means a glowing red heat. And the klal of the Torah is that one is not allowed to use kelim that were used by non-Jews, that were used for Macholos Asuras without a hechsher. I would have thought perhaps without the dictate of the Torah, maybe it's enough to take this kli and to simply immerse it and clean it till we don't have any shirayim of the trefa residue. And the chiddush of the Torah is that's not the case. It's not sufficient to go ahead and scrub and clean the pot on the outside, but the trefa pot has to be kashered. It has to be kashered according to halacha before I can use it for ochel kasher. Because if an iser is cooked in a kli, we assume the pot absorbs the tam ha-iser in the kli. And if I use the kli for kosher food, the pot will spit out, as it were, will extirpate the trefa taste in its walls into the kosher food. And one will be eating the Tam HaIsa. And that's the fundamental principle that the Torah is enunciating. So we are told we have to kasher the pot. And as the Torah indicates, and as Rashi indicated, kelim that were cooked using liquid, namely boiling soup and the like, have to be kashered with water. And this principle is enunciated here on the side. And Chazal defined this principle as kibolo kachpolto. The way the item is bolea, the way the item absorbs, that's the way the item is going to eliminate that bliya, that item that was absorbed. So there are distinctions in Hagalas Kelim depending on how it's used. A kli that's used in Eish Mamish, and that's what Rashi indicates. Shmud Vaskala, it's the Gemara at the end of Avodah Zarah, that the Gemara tells us a baking pan that has very little oil, and whatever the pot absorbs is because of the heat of the fire alone. That is to say, a kli that's used with fire or a roasting spit, or a frying pan, or the grates of a stove, they are kelim that the usage is directly through H, and therefore they have to be kashered through Libun, and cannot be used till it glows or becomes red hot. Or as Chazal defined it, nitzotzos nitzazim mimenu. There are sparks literally flying out as a result of the enormity, the intensity of the heat. Mitzad sheni, those kelim that are used for cooking with water, boiling in those pots, and then become treif through liquid. So the kashrut is for the use of hot water, what Rashi calls tashmisho aydei chamin yagileno b'chamin. So that, those are the two tzadim that the Torah presents to us. What about a third tzad? And there is a third tzad, and that is a kli that was used b'tzonon. If you look at the bottom of the page in item Zayin, this is discussed in Yerodei Sim Kuf Chaf Aleph, where the Mechaber points out that a kli that became usher was used with cold food, cold tray for food, but not hot food. So the way to kasher it is by rinsing it with cold water. And again, the same principle of kibolo kachpolto. The way the kli is bolea the isur, that's the way it's going to be polet the isur. And that's the Gemara in Psochim and the Aflamim Abbeis, where the Gemara actually has this sugya of Hechsher Kelim. So just summarizing, there are three categories of kashering. One is libun, namely glowing or making the pot red hot directly over the fire till nitzotzos nitzazim mimenu, till you have sparks that emerge from it. The second is hagola, kashering through purging with hot water. And the third is hadocha, which is quoted here on the bottom of the page in item Zayin, where the Mechaber says, "Hagol kleach kli tashmish yeshonim." If I go ahead and purchase vessels, kelim, shenishtamish b'hem b'tzona, but they were used primarily in a cold kind of medium. Digon koso, gutzluchio, v'chayotzeve, madichon. It is sufficient to rinse them with cold water. One prerequisite at the Mechaber mentioned, v'tzorch l'shafshufan heite b'mayim, b'shas hadocha, k'dei l'hosir u'lemarei ka'isur shal gabeim. Whatever residue is left, so of course that has to be clearly removed. So the Dolei HaRishonim and Dolei HaAchronim discuss conceptually what the distinction is between Libun and Hagola. When we utilize the modality of Hagola, boiling hot water, the Hagola accomplishes that the hot water that was boiled in the pot now extracts the Tam HaIsur that was absorbed in the Kli onto the water or into the water, and that's how the water now kashes the pot. The hot water is maflit the tam ha'isar. The hot water is able to go ahead and extirpate, remove the tam, the taste, from the treifa kli into the mayim, and now the kli is completely free of the tam ha'isar. That's in the context of hagola. Mashen ken libun, which refers to glowing, here we're not interested in extracting the tam ha'isar, but rather libun burns the tam ha'isar completely, eviscerates and totally destroys the Tam HaIsur. What Libun does is that the Tam HaIsur that is absorbed into the pot, into the Kli, becomes burnt out in its place, but not that I'm extracting, not that I'm removing from the pot. Because the Tam absorbed in the Kli has been burnt in its place, and now it has no ability, of course, to, in effect, render the pot Osur. So essentially, the distinction between Libun and Hagola is found actually already based on a pasuk in Chumash. You take a look here in Eidim Gimel, in the Teichacha, the Torah says in the context of B'chukosai, Im B'chukosai Teilechu V'smitzosai Tishmeru V'asisem Olsom V'nasati Mishkoni B'sochachem V'lo Sigal Nafshi Eschem. In modern Hebrew, the term that's used to describe when someone is terribly disturbed by something that someone does, or someone finds something repugnant or abominable, the term that's used is gal nefesh. That comes from this pasuk. V'loy sigal nafshi eschem. Rashi on the spot translates, sigal nafshi ein ruchi kotza b'chem. And then Rashi tells you this language of gimel ayin lamed, that's shoresh, kol ge'ila l'shom pleitas davar ha'balua b'davar acher. That this idea of hagola or ge'ila is we are removing a tam that was obviously absorbed by the pot, but in effect, that absorption can be removed. And as how is it removed? It's removed by using a similar kind of modality that was utilized when the pot became treif. Now, this is the distinction between Hagala, which again the Ramah says in Tufnun Daf directly below, found in the Halachas of Pesach, Pirush Haflota, Shakelim Poltim Ha'isa Shebahen, that the Kelim are going to extirpate. They're going to literally, the Tam will be extricated, and the Tam is being expelled by the Kli, utilizing the modality of hot water. So the Tam that was Nivla is being expelled. The Shach in Kuf Chaval in Yerodea, which is item Vav, points this out very clearly. But this is already a Yisod mentioned by all the Dolei Aposkim. But the Shach writes, Hagola ula haflit mashebola. Abo libun b'shum makam eno maflit. E l'kiluhu shemechala iso shebetocho. The Shach points out that what is libun? We are going to destroy the iso. Not that we are in any way removing the iso from the pot, but the Isur is going to be destroyed. So this distinction is found already, as I said, in the Taz in Yerodea, Simen Kuf Chafal, Sikon Zayin, in the Shach, as we just mentioned, in Simen Kuf Chafal as well. The Mishnah Berurah quotes it here in Hilchos Pesach, in Simen Tof Nun Aleph. If you have a Mishnah Berurah in front of you, you can actually see it. In Simen Tof Nun Aleph, in Sivkotin Chav Zayin. So the Mishnah Berurah actually is commenting on a din that's found above in Shulchan Aruch. If you take a look in the Chelekei and Mishnah Berurah, Simen Tof Nun Aleph. So you'll examine the Mishnah Berurah and you'll see that he discusses in Sif Dalet, the verse, let's read the Mechaber. The Mechaber says, Kelim Shemishtamshim Bahem Bayidei Ha'ur. If a Kli actually is used in a fire, in a context of fire, Kigon Shpudim V'Askalos V'Chayotzu Bahem. These are baking pans and spits and roasting pans. So here, obviously, the item was dafka utilized in this kind of a context of fire. So the Mechaber says, Tzrichim Libun, that's going to require the process of Libun. But Libun hu, achiyu nitzotzos nitzotzim mehem, sparks have to emerge from it. So the Mishnah Berurah right away explains the distinction between Libun and Hagola in Sitkot and Chavzayin. Mishnah Berurah points out over there, al yidei ha'ur pirish b'li mayim. We're talking about where there's no water, no liquid that's involved. You go on shpud vaskala. We're talking about baking pans and roasting pans. Shet solon of mul yisor shal chametz. The alpha misha askala, even though the Mishnah Berurah says that sometimes we do have perhaps some sort of fat that's smeared, even in the context of a roasting pan. Shet solon al gabo toshin al sabal yo moshkin panea b'shuman. Ein retivud madzeh matzila miyosai sholeh b'legamri. But at the end of the day, we're talking about something that's subjected to fire. That's the preeminent force that's being utilized. Ve'nodoma le'machvas ha'mavua le'kam mesif yadalv. Ulefi, the Mishnah Berurah goes on to explain, she'guf ha'chametz nogea b'hem b'shas tliyoso, there's contact with the chametz, ve'ein b'neim shum mashke she'olot tam ha'chametz etoch ha'shpud v'askala, a'idei chom ha'esh b'lvad divla b'hem tam ha'chametz. We're not talking about a blia, because blia always can only come about when there's liquid. That's one of the kolalim in Yerodea, that blia, absorption in a pot, only comes about when there's some liquid medium. But here, there's no liquid medium. It's primarily esh. And as a result, the tam is now going to be literally embedded in the walls of the pot. It's not simply a tam that's absorbed that can be removed by hagola, but it's a tam that's literally entrenched in the walls of the pot. And as a result, eino niflat mehen, says the Mishnah Berurah, gamkin aydei hagola b'mayim roschin, aydei chom ha'esh. The only way to remove it is by utilizing the medium of fire. The kibolo kach polto. That's the principle that we are articulating. Avum yodu alo shalot tzolo alav chametz vach shetzolo basur melo shalom divim v'chametz b'zeh dai ba'golam afilu lechatchila. So here we have essentially the Mechaber is going and really articulating in the next Mishnah Berurah as well in Chav Ches, when the Mechaber said that Liban is required. Here the Mishnah Berurah at great length goes into a very famous and very significant discussion found at the end of the Gemara in Abed Zorah. Mr. Berurah gives you a hakdama, he writes, and I'll read part of it. Da de isa be Gemara, de dafka drav isa hanivla bechli aide ur tzorach libun. When is libun required? When we're going to use fire. Abu drav hete hanivla bechli aide ur av shachakach nesar. He refers you to the Gemara at the end of Abed Zorah. You go psar kochim, shet salo bishpud al gabi ur, that we have meat of sacrifices that was roasted in a kind of roasting pan on top of a flame, on fire. Even though after this man, because every korban has a designated amount of time that has to be eaten. Beyond that point of time, it becomes nosar. And the Torah tells us that there's an obligation to burn that which remains. Because that's called the blia that occurred during a time when it was permissible. Only at a certain point in time, it became also became nosar. And that's the question, which is known as Hetera Bola versus Yisura Bola. And this is the big machlokes of Rishonim regarding what the status of Chametz is before this Zman HaIsur. Is it called Hetera Bola? Is it called Yisura Bola? Here the Mishnah Brura refers you to that machlokes of Rishonim. And he tells you, Menechut Ba'aposkul Min Chametz Abola Abikli, Yeshom Dezeh Gamkin Mikri Hetera Bola. Chametz, obviously, in the middle of the year, is completely Heter. Shebi'emtza Ashonok Shenivloin HaChametz Shalamul Yisur B'shmud Hoya Heter. The chametz was permissible. The alkein sagi ba'agola. That's the mokar to be mekel because it's a terabola. It was absorbed in the context of permissibility. And then others contend otherwise. Others say no. Dafka benosar. Before the appointed time when you're no longer allowed to eat the karban, at that point it becomes nosar. It's something which is left over, which is asur. So that idea of hetera bala is only applicable to b'sar kochim. L'chein nikra davar zeh b'shem hetera bala. Aval chametz. The be'esh yistam shus hashpud b'chametz or yashem chametz al abliya. You can have even a shem chametz even prior to the zman isur, even before the sixth hour, it's asur min ha-Torah, or the fifth hour, it's asur min ha-Rabbanan. Even prior to that, you can have a shem chametz. V'yachshav gam kein shmo chametz. That's not called a terabola. That's called isura bola. And once it's isura bola, then it's going to require libun. So the Mishnah Brura says, "Ulazeh hiskim rov haposkim." This is a famous machlokes of Rishonim. The alkein pasuk amechabek havasayu umikom makom ein lilmo midin zelam komas acherim. That generally speaking, we are going to be somech on this position of Rishonim who say hetera bola regarding chametz. And that will be a mocker of the hokel in many instances. So essentially what we've now discussed are three different approaches. Namely, one is called libun, where something is utilized in a context of fire. The second called hagala, something is used in a context of a liquid. And the third is hadocha, which is rinsing and scrubbing the kli from any remnant that may be connected, any remnant of fat or whatever was connected to the kli. It never absorbed Isur. It was used in a cold kind of medium, but the Isur remains on the outside of the inner walls of the Kli, and no absorption and rinsing and scrubbing will take care of that problem. So here, what does the Torah mention when it speaks of actually the items that require hechsher, that require kashering? So the Torah speaks of a Kli Mateches, speaks of the metal Kli that can be kashered. But there are certain kalim that the Gemara says can never be kashered. The classic one, of course, is a kli cheres. The Gemara says that this is based on a pasuk in Vayikra that the Torah describes when it speaks about a kli cheres. The Torah tells us that ukli cheres asher tivushalbo yishaver. This is found in item chav beis of the handout of the Mar Mekomos. These are different types of kelim. The kelim that the Torah speaks about that can be kashered are found in chav aleph. Achis azov v'yesa kosef esa nechoshes esa barzel. It's Abdil V'yesa Ofaris. Those are the materials that lend themselves to being kashered. However, Kli Cheres, the Torah says, Asher Tibushal Bo Yishover. That Kli, an earthenware Kli, cannot be kashered. In other words, if I have Psar Kodesh from Karbanos, if I have a Karban that was cooked in a Kli Cheres, an earthenware Kli, and the Kli Cheres absorbed the time of the Psar Kodesh, so once the Zman Achila is over, once the appointed time for that Karban is no longer extant, it becomes nosar, left over. The bliya, the psalm kodesh, inside the glicheris also becomes nosar. Not only does any basar remaining is nosar, but even the bliya is also nosar. The glicheris absorb nosar atam isar. There's no eitz in the kasher except to break it. That's the only way to kasher an earthenware kli. The way the Gemara expresses it in Psochem, Daflamon and Beis, HaTorah He'ida al glicheris. The Torah itself testifies. That's the language of the pasuk that we just cited. Ukli cheres asher tibushalbo yishaver. The kli cheres that was used for cooking, the only way to kasher it is through breaking it. HaTorah he'idah kli cheres sheniyotze midei dofio le'olam. A Kli Cheres can never spit out whatever it was absorbed. That Bliya remains embedded in the Kli Cheres, and that's accepted in the Halacha that the Kli Cheres cannot be kashered. There are many Chiluk Adinim, even on Kli Cheres, depending if it was Balea and Yisa Daraisa and Yisa Darabonon, and that's already a separate issue that has to be discussed with Poskin. So here, the dinim that the Torah has presented to us in this parsha, the dinim of a kli matechet, a metal kli, that either one kashes it through libun, or one kashes it through hagola, and kli cheres has absolutely no way for it to undergo any kind of hechshem. Another question that comes up, which is of course a very common question, because today we have so many different types of kelim made of so many different materials, and let's begin by talking about a kli eitz. I was actually in Holland once in my life. And I was there actually because during the days when I flew to Eretz Yisrael as a young man. And in one occasion, I discovered that the flight that I thought I was on was non-existent. And I ended up in Holland over Shabbos, Friday, Shabbos, and Sunday, which was an absolutely mind-boggling experience from many, many perspectives. First, I saw there they actually wear wooden shoes, the Dutch. This is many, many years ago. Today, wooden shoes have become far more common. I don't know the nature of shoes that people wear today. I don't think anyone anymore wears anything that's called footwear from a halachic standpoint. The kind of footwear that's being worn today seems to be every single imaginable kind of material other than leather. But whatever the case is, I noticed that they had that. And they also had actually many, many kelim that were made of wood. There were many other different aspects of Holland that I saw. I was lucky to see the kever of the Binyan Ariel, of Sholmi Amsterdam, one of the Gdolei Ador. And I also dive in the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. I also noticed that there in Holland, they actually, on Shabbos, even though as far as I know, there was no Erev, but they walked around on a sunny day carrying what seemed to be parasols, umbrellas. For the life of me, I was absolutely beside myself, and I actually went to the chief rabbi of Holland, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, to ask him this question. I walked actually quite a distance, and he presented to me an entire thesis that has a din of a tachshit. I found that to be very mechudosh, but whatever the case is, that was my stint in Holland with the wooden shoes. So now we're back to Kli Eitz or Kli Evin. So wooden kelim or stone kelim, in the Torah there's no mention of Kli Eitz or Kli Evin. There's no guidance given for us. Mitzad Echad, one could argue that Kli Eitz and Kli Evin don't require kashering because the Torah understood that they're not Bolea Isar. The Torah apparently assumed there's no absorption in these kelim, even if they're cooked in them. It's sufficient to simply do rinsing and scrubbing, and that would suffice regarding these kelim. Mitzad Sheni, you could say just the reverse. The reason Kli Eitz and Kli Evin aren't mentioned because they have no means of being kashered, similar to Kli Cheres. So we don't really have any knowledge one way or the other. And perhaps the third possibility would be that it's like a Kli Matechet, like a metal Kli, and requires Hechshir. And most Poskim assume that Kli Eitz and Kli Evin can be kashered, has the same status as Kli Matechet. That's discussed in Yerodea, in Simen Kuf Chaf Aleph Sif Beis. And again, the assumption is that if it's used in a context of hot water, it can be kashered with hot water. If it's used with cold, it can be kashered, as I mentioned earlier, with hadocha. People often ask regarding aluminum kelim. So Poskim generally assume that it's the same as kli matechet, same as a metal kli, and is kashered in a similar kind of fashion. That's what Rabbi Shafainzin Zatzal writes in Arachayim Chelek Gimel, Simen Nun Ches, that aluminum has the same status as matechet, as metal. So due to modern technology, all different kinds of kelim are being manufactured, consisting of materials that never existed in ancient times. And I'll mention a number of the items that people have asked me about in the past. I'm talking about rubber kelim. I'm talking about plastic kelim. Today you can go to stores where every single kli in the store is made of plastic. I remember many, many years ago, I had a connection with him. I was a rav in a shul in the Bronx, and he davened in that shul. And I used to walk him home every single Shabbos, and I had a connection with him for many other reasons as well. And I remember once speaking to him about the fact that now plastic is coming into mode, and he said, don't worry, the ganze Welt is plastic. The whole world is plastic anywhere. The whole world is just artificial, and no one is, there's no substance left anywhere. So it fits, on the contrary. And then he told me in Yiddish, if the shoe fits, wear it. So let people wear plastic shoes because they're essentially plastic themselves, and there's no substance to the entire world. This was said to me several decades ago when I was a young Rav. And anyway, we have newly invented materials, and there's a big machlokus regarding these kelim. Hagoyna Moshe Feinstein Zatzal discusses the issue of gumi and plastic. There's no mokar at all in Rishonim. And as a result, the question is, there's no sorcerer being machshir such kelim. So offhand, one would say they should not be kashir. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that regarding rubber that's manufactured from wood, so that is subject to hagolam. However, other forms of rubber and plastic, he writes, should not be kashir. And many poskim disagree. And many poskim assume that one could be machshir rubber kelim, one could kashir plastic kelim. As a matter of fact, the Rabbanut here in Eretz Yisrael and the talking about the Rabbanut Tzvait, their kelim are very largely, to a large extent, made of plastic. But those plastic kelim are incredibly durable and resilient and quite strong. I've noticed, actually, they can even weather temperatures of literally several thousand degrees. They're far stronger than any metal kli, which would melt very quickly if one was subjected to the kind of intense heat that these plastic kelim are subjected to. But there's another chash, not to kashir plastic, because the nature of the material is such that sometimes, if the plastic is not such a strong material, it might be ruined if you immerse it in hot boiling water. And any kli with a zechshash being ruined, and that might impact the actual tevila, so it cannot be kashir according to halacha. We're worried that the owner won't kashir it properly. So regarding plastic, so some poskim say that even though mikra adin could be kashir, mitzad the material part of it, since it may not withstand hot water, depending on the nature of the plastic, so the bible will not do a good job. And that's a reason in and of itself not to kashir plastic. So this is a fundamental machlokus among the Dolei HaPoskim. Is discussed actually by Dayan Weiss Zatzal and by the Chalkus Yaakov, Agoin of Yaakov Reich of Switzerland. So this is a very famous machlokus among the Dolei HaPoskim. My Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, was very opposed to kashering plastic. He felt it's not possible to kasher plastic under any circumstances. There's a third opinion, which is relevant to us, namely, that even if you assume that you can kasher plastic and rubber and other kelim, kol hashana kula, but certainly not for Pesach. And that seems to be the practice among the Gdolei HaPoskim, that even though regarding basar v'cholov and treifas, you can kasher plastic and rubber, but we're not going to go ahead on Pesach and utilize such kelim. We're not going to kasher them. And here we're going to go ahead and purchase new kelim, I imagine new plastic kelim or new rubber kelim, since we seem to enjoy rubber and enjoy plastic. So we're going to purchase parallel kelim that will be used exclusively for Pesach. There's another question which also is often raised regarding klei zchuchis, glassware. And again, glassware is not mentioned in the Torah. Just as I pointed out a moment ago, klei even and klei eitz are not mentioned in Chumash. We don't have any mention as well of glassware. And there are poskim who feel that glassware does not have to be kashered at all. It's sufficient to go ahead and rinse glassware. The reason why they will make it with glass, because the Gemara says, and Chazal said, and the Poskim said, the nature of glass is that it is what Chazal calls shin yud ayin yud. It is smooth. It does not absorb the time of any food. Because of the smoothness of glass, because of its texture, because of its nature, there's no absorption, there's no bliya that's taking place, and therefore there's no need whatsoever to kasher glass. And that's the position of the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch. If you take a look, if you have the Shulchan Aruch again in front of you, Siman Tov Nun Aleph, and you'll see at the end of Siman Tov Nun Aleph, in Sif Chav Vav, here we have a reference to that issue. In Sif Chav Vav, the Mechaber says the following, Klei Zchuchis, glassware, Afilu Machniso Lekiyum, Afilu Mishtamish Ben Mechamim Meitzorach Shum Hechsher. Glassware does not require any heksher. Sheim and bolim, because there's no blia in glass. Glass does not absorb. Uvishtifa ba'al masagilu, it's enough to go ahead and simply rinse it. And the Ramos says, Yeshomim, Yesh machmir, ba'omim, the klei zchuchis, afilu hagolo lamanilu, that they're machmir, and even hagolo will not suffice. And that's the practice, not to kasher glassware. If you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, he points out in Kufnun Gimel the reason why the Mechaber contended that there's no need to kasher glassware, says the Mishnah Berurah, because we're talking about chalokim b'koshim heim. It means it's smooth and it's very hard. And then in Kufnun Dal, he explains the position of those that are machmir, the Ramah. The Sirlu, the clay sluch is holo tchilas b'riyasim erachol. It's initially, how is it made? It's made from sand. Harei kuklicheres, and he also made it definitely olom. He compares it to klicheres, to earthenware that cannot be kashin. Afilai de'agola. You have got the tashmishu b'tzonon. Sometimes it's used in a cold medium, sometimes it's used in a hot medium. And that's what he writes later on, Sifcha Fei. And then, the chen aminog, so that's what the Mishnah Berurah here discusses, the issue of rov tashmish. B'tzonon, a rov tashmish b'chamin. And that's another fascinating machlokes in Sfardim and Ashkenazim regarding how a kli, in terms of determining the nature of the kli, what is it used primarily or preeminently? The Sfardim, again, are... this issue is the machlokes in Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Perhaps I'll discuss this separately, but just mentioning the nature of glass. I grew up actually in my home, and my mother, Alei HaShalom, used the same glasses for both milchus and fleshiks. There's no distinction. We drank from milchiga glasses. The same glasses were used for fleshiks as well, and there was no need to be choshed. My mother, she was a very pious woman, very medaktik b'mitzvahs. The question is, what is the nature of glass? So the Shachan Yerodei already points out that there is perhaps a bliya, but it's minimalistic. It's certainly the kind of bliya that takes place in a glass kli is far less than anything comparable in terms of other material. And the Taz over there in Sivkot Yeral writes that glass is not bolea bichlau. And that's the basis for the opinion of the Mechaber, that when the Mishnah Berurah quoted that glass is chazak, v'kasheh, smooth and hard, it's not bolea, and therefore does not require any kind of hagola under any circumstances. On the other hand, there are those who assume that glass has the same din as metal. They do absorb. They have to be kasher to hagola, to purging in hot water. You'll take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. It's a very fascinating Mishnah Berurah. I actually underlined it over here on the same page that we just were on Tofnun Aleph. Look at the Shaar HaTzion. The Shaar HaTzion in Kuf Tzadik Vov has a comment. He quotes over here the Shaar HaTzion the following. He mentions the B'di'eved, we have an issue with glass. The after B'taz Mashma L'chor D'mekel L'gamri B'di'eved. The Taz feels, as I just pointed out, that there's no bliya whatsoever in glass. There's no absorption. The Mishnah Berurah said, the Shaar HaTzion here, one has difficulty being mekel. And he finds in the Chiddush HaRitva that Kli Zchuch is bolea b'tzorach hagola. But then he writes that we're worried about Hagola in a Klei Zchuchis because it might, Rachman Litzan, as a result of being subjected to massive heat, it might actually completely collapse, implode. And therefore, you can see the back and forth regarding Klei Zchuchis, regarding what the status of glassware is. There's a third opinion, actually, that contends that glassware has the same status as Cheres, as an earthenware vessel, because it's manufactured, as I just said, from sand, as is cheres, and there's no hechsher of a klei zchuchis, similar to a klei cheres, to earthenware where there's no hechsher, there's no way of kashering it. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Chilmi Pariz, cited by the Beis Yosef, the Sheet of the Ramah, here in Tof Nun Aleph. Halacha l'maisa, when it comes to Pesach again, we are machmir. We are machmir, like the last position that I mentioned, the chatchila, glass should not be kashered for Pesach. However, in Shari Surim, we can be megel to machsher glass. And from what I understand, there are various minhagim in Jewish homes, as I mentioned, my home that I grew up in, my mother, Leah Shalom, had to deal with glass. Some permit themselves to buy used glass kalim from goyim. They scrub it down, they rinse it, they clean it well. They use it after tevila without kashering it. And that's based on the poskim that the Mishnah Berurah quoted, that glass is smooth and glass is hard. Glass is not balea. Glass does not need kashering. The one who passes like that, Nalacha is Yeruch HaShulchan. Yeruch HaShulchan, Yeruch there, Kuf Chaf Aleph, is very meko when it comes to glass. And some are knowing regarding glassware that we don't need separate glasses, as I mentioned before, for Chalavim Sari, the milchiks and fleishiks, but we could use the same glasses to both milchiks and fleishiks, provided that after each usage we clean it and rinse it well. But it does not require any hechsher. And there are gedolim of the previous generation. You'll take a look in the sefer. Sidur Pesach Hilchaso, he quotes from one of the gedolei ador, Rab David Leiv Zilberstein, Zatzal of the previous door, who actually contended that this is the way one should deal with glass. But Eidach Yisa, there are those who feel one should not use glassware for milchus and fleishiks. I think that is the general practice today, from what I can see among Ashkenazim, that they have different sets of glassware that they use for milchiks and different sets of glassware they use for fleishiks. Nor should we buy used glassware from non-Jews, even if we're going to kasher it later on. Except in the Eved, again, if a Jew's glass was used for trefa macholim, we could be mekel to kasher. But the chatchila, even with glass, we should use it for both milchus and fleishiks. So regarding glassware, there are three different opinions in poskim and different customs regarding the use of glassware in Jewish homes. And clearly, each custom has a makar in halacha. Now, those who feel that glassware has to be kashered, how do we go ahead and kasher glassware? So again, if the glass were used with a hot medium, namely, I'm talking about yatzo lettuce, similar to what we have in Hilchos Shabbos and elsewhere, so then we have to kasher the way it was used. If it was used with hot liquid, it would have to be kasher with hot liquid. Again, the same principle that we enunciated earlier, kibolo kapolto, that principle applies here as well. It was only used in a cold medium, we kasher it by rinsing it with cold water. However, there's a possibility that the glassware became usur by soaking it. If it was soaked, saturated in the ether for 24 hours, so we have a din when something soaks in a liquid 24 hours, it'll absorb even without any heat based on the din of kavush, harekim avushol. Something that's kavush, that's pickled, that is soaked for a 24-hour period is considered to be as if it were cooked. For example, if the ether was soaked in a bottle for 24 hours, the bottle is usa because it absorbed. There's blia that takes place after 24 hours. So the way we kasher these kind of kelim is what's called milui v'irui, namely filling it up with water and then pouring out the water. This is the way we kasher glassware. We would take these glasses, you would take those crystal glasses, you put it into some sort of a tub or a bucket that's covered with water, regular water. You cover over the glass with water, you leave it there for 24 hours, you then change the water after 24 hours, fill it up again, leave it for a second 24-hour period. Again, you will change the water for a third time, fill it up, and that is the concept, the hechsher, of milui v'irui, essentially 3 days, 72-hour period of constantly it being immersed in water for a 24-hour period, for 72 hours, sachako, and therefore the same approach was used to kasher glassware, milu v'iwu. This is also discussed by the Mishnah Berurah at the end of Sof Siman Tov Nun Aleph, discussed by the Chayavim, and Klal Kuf Chafei, Sivkot and Chabez. Someone asked me if they used the same water for 3 days. They didn't change the water. They're supposed to change the water 3 times. So the 3 days are only credited as 1 day. That's how Poskim seemed to be machmir, and he has to continue to soak it for an extra 2 days. Again, it doesn't even have to be 3 consecutive days. That's also discussed in Yerodea. So these are some of the areas that are very significant, very fundamental, relating to some of the issues surrounding the concept of Hagolah. And as I said, again, just to summarize, we mentioned that there are 3 different types of heksher. One is called Libun, that is dafka using fire. Again, a baking pan, a roasting pan, one is Hagolah in a liquid medium, and one is the concept of Hadocha using actually water. And these are 3 different ways of kashering. Again, let's just summarize what we mentioned, because this is very significant. Libun means glowing, where the kli becomes red hot. Hagolah is through hot water. Hadocha is rinsing well with cold water based on this principle of Kabbalah Kapolto. Kashering a kli is doing the exact same thing as it became also in the opposite direction. Again, a kli used on the fire without liquid, so you kasher it with libun without liquid. A roasting spit for meat that's placed over a spit or over a grill, and the meat is roasted without any additional liquid, no water is added, or a baking pan. Again, it became usur. It can only be kashered till it glows. That's known as libun, and the way to do it is by putting it in the fire or putting it over burning coals. That's where Chazal actually speak about this miluye they speak about milu gecholim, using it burning coals, the kli becomes red hot. That's the lashon of the peskim, she nitzaitzis nitzim imenu, till sparks fly out. That's the level of heat needed for libum. Only that extreme heat will burn away the isa, as I mentioned earlier, from Beshach. So when we kasher a kli through libum, we don't have to be melabi and kol hakli b'pam achas. You don't have to do the entire kli at one time. There's one distinction between tevila, tevilas kelim, and hagolas kelim. Tevilas kelim requires the entire kli has to be immersed at one time, similar to a person going to a mikveh. He has to be submerged under the mikveh, his entire body, bevas achas. However, when it comes to kashering and kli, when it comes to hagolah, when it comes to libum, there you go ahead and do it piecemeal. It's enough to heat one part of the kli in one instance, and when finished with one side, then you simply invert the kli, and you are malabi in the second part of the kli till the entire kli becomes mislabi. This is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, in Yerodea, in Siman Kuf Chaf Aleph. And even if a person only used le'isa one half of the kli, it's not enough to kasher one half of the kli. You have to be malabi in the entire kli. We'd have to kasher the entire kli. And the minig is, again, after libun to the entire kli when it's red hot, the minig is subsequently to go ahead and rinse it in cold water. That's the practice that people follow. So this procedure of libun is called, in halacha, libun chamur, extreme libun. There's a second madrega of libun, which is called libun kal, a lighter kind of libun. Whenever a kli can be kasher to hagola, alternatively, it can be kasher with a simple libun, with libun kal. Because libun chamor, this extreme libun, is only necessary for those kelim that don't suffice with hagola. You need libun chamor. Those kelim we're purging, or hagola is enough to kasher them with water. You can do it alternatively, a libun kal. So again, the halacha is that if I have a kli that was used without any liquid whatsoever, I mentioned earlier, so there you would require libun chamor. A kli that's used exclusively with fire, with minimalistic liquid. However, once a kli has used with liquid, most pots used for cooking food is used with water, used with soup. So the pot, if it becomes usur, became usur in a liquid medium. There's water in the pot, there's soup in the pot, or a spoon that was placed in the pot over the fire with water or soup. But those kelim don't need libun, only require hagola, which means it's kasher without water, and that's called libun kal. So libun kal means placing the pot over the fire where it could burn a piece of straw. Kash is nisraf, or a thread, once the pot is hot enough. That's called libun kal, and that's sufficient to remove the isur from the kli. So also with libun kal, the practice is to rinse it again with water after the hechsher. Means both libun and hagolam are going to, in effect, precipitate after the action is performed, after the libun is performed, and after the hagolah is performed. So we're going to rinse it with water, and that's mentioned in the Aruch HaShulchan. And again, as I said, that if you want to test for libun kal, people put a piece of tissue paper next to the kli. If it turns brown because of the heat, that's a siman, obviously, that libun kal has taken place. Okay, Yemitz Hashem, the next year, I'll discuss some more aspects of Hagolah that are quite relevant and then connected more specifically to areas having to do with the Yom Tov of Pesach, Habo Aleinu L'Tovah.
Well, we mentioned about the